Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. In the next 30 minutes, we'll go beyond the headlines with insight and analysis from leaders and decision makers shaping our future. So whether you're tuning in live or catching up later, stay ahead with just some of the stories that really count. Coming up on the program today, a family member on the Jocelyn Smith kidnap verdict, global growth slows and tariffs rise, what this really means for your pocket in 2025, fraudsters now posing as South African police service members, and a title deed is no longer a measure of success for many young people. It's Monday, the 5th of May. Now, the global economy may have limped into 2025, but with trade wars reigniting, inflation stubbornly hanging on, and South Africa's own growth faltering at just 0.6%, uncertainty, I wager, has become the only constant. Add to that the postponed national budget, it's now being retabled on the 21st of May, as well as the tenuous government of national unity. Investors, I think, are left these days with more questions than actual clarity. So let's try and scythe our way through the weeds as far as that is all concerned. I'm in conversation with Mark Phillips, Head of Portfolio Management and Analytics at PPS Investments. Mark, so growth rate of 0.6% last year. South Africa, is it still a country worth betting on for long-term investors, or do you think the structural rot has set in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, thanks, Jeremy, for that question. Yeah, I mean, SA is not booming, but I think, you know, it is holding the line. You know, as you can sort of see, the Reserve Bank currently is also playing sort of a broader measured game. You know, as you mentioned, growth, you know, was just sort of 0.6 in 2024. And, you know, the OECD has revised SA's 2025 forecast up to 1.6, which, you know, is quite notable. And I think that's, you know, largely a function of, you know, broader strong commodity export performance and largely contained inflation environment. I think what you are seeing playing out is, you know, the SARB has moved in Jan, they've paused in March, which, you know, correctly is cautious. And as you've mentioned, I think, you know, there is quite a lot of sort of political noise around, you know, things happening around the budget, VAT, and, you know, needed structural reform and broader alignment around sort of the GNU that isn't exactly guaranteed right now.
You're not the first person to note that trade fragmentation and tariffs are big global risks. As far as investors into South Africa are concerned, do you think they may be underestimating how bad Trump 2.0 could be for an emerging market like ours?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have seen sort of April's tariff shock, you know, as probably one of the most significant in a generation, or at least in my time. And I think, you know, the broader 90-day pause may only be a tactical breather. You know, one could argue that the sort of tariff shock is as big as what you sort of saw in the 1930s. And potentially it could reshape global trade flows and investor confidence. And, you know, South Africa, as it stands, you know, is quite a liquid emerging market. So if there's any negative sentiment towards, you know, EMs, broadly South Africa effectively feels that shock. I think with that said, there is quite a lot of opportunity in it. I mean, I think, you know, in the event that you sort of see the move away from the US and the dollar, and the search for yield effectively plays out, you know, we are well poised. But, you know, one big sort of the sort of political sort of, you know, structural reform risk that needs to happen. And if we do participate in that, that's, you know, a different question.
Where do you see the opportunity, Mark?
You know, I think, you know, as our bond deals stand, I mean, I think, you know, there is, it's quite healthy. You know, it's sort of inflation plus five, you know, easy. You know, the SARB and the IMF has sort of, you know, confirmed broader disinflation. And, you know, therefore, a broader higher yield in a sort of portfolio context, you know, is good. it does come with risks. I mean, I think, you know, as it stands, if you look at our sort of asset allocation or tactical views, we are sort of, you know, underweight the asset class as such, just because of the fiscal risk and uncertainty that exists at the moment. But it's definitely going to help a portfolio, you know, over the long term because of the real yields.
Mark, maybe let's bring it down to the individual investor, if we can. Against the backdrop that you've just outlined, how do they need to be, one, approaching risk, but two, rethinking or recalibrating their mindset?
At the end of the day, I mean, if 2024 as such, you know, you've always sort of got to look back, not that it repeats, but it does sort of rhyme. And coming into this year, you know, we came off a sense of, you know, 2024 was about sort of recovery. You know, 2025 as such, I think, you know, there's sort of, not that it's binary, but I think there's a careful balance between, you know, will China and the US not de-escalate? And I think, you know, that's bad, you know, how it plays out, versus sort of will Trump sort of cut taxes and sort of maybe step back a bit, and in a way that could be sort of a good positive surprise. So, you know, the risk at sort of points of stress is to do something. But I think for us at the end of the day, we are focused on sort of almost staying disciplined. I think you've got to be cautious around what's happening, and effectively being exposed to enough managers with agility to almost navigate what's next. You know, the market is pricing in, suppose, a technical recession right now, nothing more at this stage. And you know, consensus is broadly that, you know, Trump has somewhat blinked. But, you know, he could blink again, and it's sort of understanding, you know, is there complacency that's sort of setting in, which is, you know, quite difficult to know.
That, of course, is the problem, isn't it? All roads lead back to Donald Trump, because it's difficult to price risk into an environment that can flip with one tariff announcement.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you've got to be, you know, cautious. I think, you know, as we've almost tried to position ourselves, is be resilient, but also somewhat flexible in mind. You know, we've been deliberate around our tilts. We've still got quite a, you know, moderate risk on a tilt for SA equities. You know, we longer duration from a global bonds perspective, just understanding that, you know, there is this sort of flight to safety and you need that sort of barbell sense. I think, you know, going through Q1, I mean, that has showed us that, you know, markets are increasingly narrative driven. I mean, as you said now, in our, you know, the sort of, as we would now call it, maybe in time, the Liberation Day sort of announcement, you know, has somewhat put us on a direction of almost pivotal uncertainty that we just need to be comfortable with, I guess. And I think in this 90-day sort of pause, which sort of takes us to the 4th of July, is somewhat of a temporary relief, but I think it's sort of just being able to almost look at it in a sense of, you know, in grappling with a new reality of, you know, geopolitical fragmentation and, you know, broader unpredictable sort of, you know, policy that might impact the fiscal setting or even trade.
So where does PPS at the moment see the biggest risk for portfolio erosion? Would it be equities? You've already referenced bonds, or maybe even in cash?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's when sort of the rising tide leaves and where there's sort of a big crisis, I think there's not always everywhere to hide. But I think when we think about sort of our outlook and where we are positioning, I think, you know, it plays out in different ways. We do look at the valuation. We understand sort of the broader wave of change and sort of, you know, where the momentum is. We still favor SA equity. I think that's sort of a good valuation underpin. And as you saw in Q1, you know, as there is this broader safety into real assets, you know, our commodity, our gold producers also sort of, you know, helped keep the equity market alive and doing well. So I think, you know, there's opportunity in that. You know, the nominal bonds, as I said, you know, we are quite cautious, but I think from a real yield perspective, things are good there. You know, I think cash is always king. I think, you know, we do like cash locally and offshore, more from an uncertainty perspective, but also as, you know, dry powder, assuming that you get further chances, you know, if markets do pull back. Global equity, you know, is quite rich in terms of the valuation. But I think, you know, we are looking at that, you know, carefully, more to be sort of neutral, because I think in sometimes, you know, a bull market effectively climbs a wall of worry. And I think, you know, I think there's days that if you miss out on them, I think, you know, it does impact the longer term performance of portfolios. So I think we're just trying to sort of balance that, Jeremy. And yeah, I think trying to understand, I guess, as we sort of move forward, you know, to what extent do you need to move away from the US into sort of like the euro or other broader emerging market currencies that might also help. But I mean, yeah, I think it's more of an understanding from that perspective.
Mark Phillips, thank you very much indeed for that broad overview, Head of Portfolio Management and Analytics at PPS Investments.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, you'll be well aware the judgment in the high-profile Joshlyn Smith case was handed down late last week by Judge Nathan Erasmus, and that brings to an end an 8-week-long trial. The three accused were convicted on counts of trafficking in persons and kidnapping stemming from the disappearance of Joshlyn on the 19th of February this year. Now, Joshlyn's mother, Raquel Kelly Smith, her boyfriend, Jacqueline Apollos, and their friend, Stefano van Rijn, now face life imprisonment. That is the prescribed minimum sentence for human trafficking. I want to discuss this in a little more detail. I'm in conversation with Michaela Daniels, who is Joshlyn Smith's aunt. So first of all, three people found guilty of kidnapping and human trafficking charges. I guess my first question, Michaela, and welcome and thank you very much for talking to me. Are you satisfied? Is the family satisfied with this verdict?
I believe that what happened to Jocelyn is something that she never deserves. So yes, as her aunt, I am satisfied with the verdict, because at the end of the day, justice must be served for our little ones.
What do you think and how do you feel about the accused deciding not to testify?
To be honest, I can't think of any reason why she decided not to testify. But I must say that I'm very disappointed and heartbroken over the fact that she made that decision, because all of us wants to know the truth.
How difficult has it been for you to be in court and listening to this 8-week-long trial unfold?
This is a very, very emotional and challenging time for me. And the fact that I can't be there is also emotional, man. It's draining.
The case has had a massive impact on the family as a whole. How then do you, as a unit, start to move forward? If, in fact, Michaela, you can do that?
Moving forward won't be easy. But I do believe by supporting each other, we will eventually get through this, as we still need to process everything.
And how difficult is it for the family to process that? What are you doing in that respect?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult because we are not together. I'm in the north. I'm in Upington. My parents live that side. We don't stay together. My mother is going through the most. She can't handle this. So it's difficult for us to process the situation.
When you talk to your mother, Michaela, what kind of conversation are you having with her, and what is she telling you? Because as you say, it must have taken a tremendous toll on her.
Well, I don't want to talk too much about this case when it comes to my mother, because my mother do have depression. So talking about this case makes her very emotional.
I'm sure it does. She also indicated, if I read correctly last week, that she wants nothing to do with Kelly going forward. Can you confirm that for me? And where do you stand on this?
I understand why my mother feels that way. I mean, if my daughter had to do something like that, I would have felt the exact same way. Because how can a mother do that to her own child? But at the end of the day, we still need to forgive her. Because no one is perfect, and we expect God to forgive us. So who are we not to forgive each other?
But very difficult for anyone to find that forgiveness, I imagine, in their heart.
Definitely.
Are you hopeful? Is the family hopeful that Joshlyn might still be found?
Yes, we are. And I believe that we will remain hopeful up until the day that we find Joshlyn.
Well, obviously a very difficult time for the family. Michaela Daniels, the aunt of Joshlyn Smith, thank you very much for talking to me today.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Now, I want to move on to an issue now affecting many South Africans, a sophisticated banking scam involving fraudsters impersonating police officers to extract personal and financial information. This is worrying. And I'm in conversation now with Nazia Karim from the Southern African Fraud Prevention Service. Hopefully we can shed some light on this alarming trend and perhaps more importantly, how we can protect ourselves. So Nazia, first of all, welcome. And how are the scammers impersonating SAPS officers to deceive individuals? What's the modus operandi here?
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you for having me on the show. So the scam's actually been occurring for quite a while now. But in recent months, there's been an increased volume in the number of impersonation of the Bloemfontein Police Station officials in particular. And they are pretending to be investigating heinous crimes for which they then go about accusing the victims of having taken part in. It's actually part of a growing trend that's taking place right now where the scammers are impersonating all kinds of government officials with the aim obviously being to exploit public trust and then steal their personal information and money.
And one would be psychologically intimidated by these tactics because the whole idea, I guess, is to instill fear, but also a sense of urgency, perhaps.
Yes, definitely. This is a very sophisticated blend of scams. It's using both social engineering, impersonation, and some cyber tactics as well to intimidate the victim. So when they hear the voice of the person on the other side, they are automatically assuming they're speaking to a formal SAPS official. The scammer is using the tone and the language that's actually used by the SAPS officials to create a credible sounding scam. And then after you've been accused of a crime such as drug trafficking or human trafficking, you are already intimidated. And to add to that, they are sending the victims or the targets fake warrants of arrest or search and seizure warrants via WhatsApp. And people who are seeing this for the first time don't know these documents. So they actually believe they are now being investigated.
So if they're being told they're being investigated, what specific information then is being sought by the scammers?
So the scammers are looking for very personal information, things like your banking information, your confidential, your private information. They're actually requesting the targets and the victims to provide banking statements, photocopies or screenshots of their banking apps, to forward banking statements on this WhatsApp number that they've now begun communicating on. And they also started a new trend where they use video calls to help prove the statements. So, you know, you say you're a victim, I'm innocent, I've not taken part in this particular crime you're accusing me of. So the scammers say, very good, log on to a video call, prove your innocence, and we'll take your statement electronically. And then they collect the people's also, voice information's also collected. And this information's then supposedly going to be used to prove their innocence.
So as you say, very sophisticated. Is there a step or are there steps that individuals can take at the get-go then to verify the authenticity of such communication?
Yes, firstly, you need to remember that if somebody claims to be a police officer and they do call you, you as a citizen of this country, you have the right to verify their identity. And you can do this by contacting your police station directly, or you can use the number that's available on the SAPS website and contact their central environment. You can also call from the YIMA website, our hotline, 083123SCAM and get 7226. And contact the SAPS there and find out, is this particular person an official of the South African Police Services and are they involved in this investigation? You must remember that the scammers are going to tell you not to contact the cops here because they are also using the excuse of corruption as an excuse not to, contact your police station or let other people inform about this particular type of thing for compromisation of the investigation. But you need to protect yourself. So verify them before you give away any information.
What do we know about the groups or the syndicates that are behind this new type of scam or this intensification of this existing scam, where they're operating from, for instance?
Well, it's definitely not situated locally in the sense that it could be an international scam, international syndicate rather, using local tools, technologies, and syndicates locally to be able to perceive the how it can actually be implemented and how it can actually affect our locals. But it's definitely something bigger than we are accustomed to. And unfortunately, we're still investigating it, hopefully to find out where it's originating from and how we can actually take it down.
So you are investigating at the moment. Have any arrests been made regarding this type of scam? And are the investigations proving successful at this point, or is it too early?
So SAFPS does not conduct investigation ourselves. The police, the Hawks and the police will actually conduct the investigations. Our responsibility is to actually collect the information from the victims so that we can actually derive intelligence that we will provide to law enforcement for them to conduct that investigation. There are still, it's still a bit early to say that we can pinpoint any particular individual, but the investigations are ongoing.
And just a final one, and very quickly, should you suspect that you have been scammed, what is the immediate step that one needs to take?
First thing you need to do is hang up. Just drop the call. The moment you have that feeling something doesn't feel right, the moment they're asking you to take a video statement, which is illegal in South Africa, drop the call. The moment they start asking you to take pictures of your bank statements and send you documentation over WhatsApp, drop the call. Anything requiring you to provide personal and private, personal and confidential information without having actually met the person in a formal way, without having you being served the documentation via a sheriff, no police officer is going to send you a warrant of arrest or search and seizure via WhatsApp. It's illegal. It's not it's not the correct procedure. So the moment it falls outside of that regular process, you need to drop the call. It's a scam looking for every way, form, and manner to work around those processes and intimidate you into actually giving away that information or downloading the fake apps that they're sending you via the WhatsApp channels and then loading the malware onto your devices and then further compromising yourself.
Nazia Karim, thank you very much indeed. We have been duly warned from the Southern African Fraud Prevention Service. I do appreciate your time.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, there seems to be a significant shift in housing preferences among young South Africans. Recent trends indicate a growing inclination towards renting rather than buying property. So what's behind this? I want to discuss this development with Chris Tyson, CEO of Tyson Properties in Cape Town. Chris, a very warm welcome. And in your opinion, then, what factors are driving young South Africans to prefer renting?
There's a lot of different factors at the moment. So young professionals are preferring to actually rent over buying for the main reason to be able to move to different areas. So young professionals are job hunting at the moment and they are moving from one job to another. If I can use an example, if somebody's living in Sandton and working in Sandton and they move to Midrand for a job, they would rather move to Midrand based on the fact that they don't want to travel, the infrastructure is not what it used to be, and they don't want to spend hours in the car every day.
So essentially what I'm hearing you say is that lifestyle and career mobility is perhaps the driving force here, and that would seem to be something that is likely to stay.
I think it's going to be staying for a long time. So it's a worldwide trend that young professionals are actually preferring to rent as opposed to buying. But South Africa certainly adds a few extra things to it when it comes to making those decisions. If you look at the Gauteng property market at the moment, it's seen very little growth over the last couple of years. So young professionals are not really seeing property as an investment at the moment. So, and I think the fact they can be quite liquid and that they can move quite easily is more appealing to them.
And when it comes down to brass tacks, then the cost of renting in comparison to buying in today's market, is there a marked difference?
It depends on what area you're looking at. So if you look in the Gauteng area, no, there's not a huge difference. So the only difference is that a person renting can budget a lot better. So they don't have to worry about interest rates increasing, et cetera, rates and things like that, maintenance on properties. So yeah, they can budget a lot easier. If you look at the Cape Town market, it's completely different. So you can actually, especially the upper end of the market, you can actually rent a lot cheaper than actually buying. But the lower end of the market is actually still pretty much the same.
Can we bore down into that a little more if we can, particularly in the Johannesburg and maybe the Cape Town areas? Which of those particular nodes are experiencing a higher demand for rentals and why?
Well, it's mostly the hubs in Johannesburg, so your Sandtons, your Rosebanks, where you've got very nice apartments, good shopping centres, good schools, etc. Very, very popular with people renting. So all your major nodes where you have large office blocks, etc., for people to work from. And in the Cape, it's more lifestyle type of environment. So people go more for a lifestyle. Also, schools plays a big influence, but it's more lifestyle there.
But aside from that, it's current economic conditions, Chris, that is also driving this process and influencing preference, I believe. And in many respects, there's a lack of initiative in addressing housing affordability for young people. And I would contend not only in South Africa, but as you've alluded to earlier, it's a worldwide issue, isn't it?
It is a worldwide issue. Yeah, so I mean, there's still quite a few entry-level properties, so it is harder for young people to get onto that property ladder. So I think they are rather waiting, and then when their moment is correct for them to get onto that property ladder. If you look at the Gauteng market in particular, there's been very little increase in property prices over the last 10 years. So, you know, for them to wait a couple more years until they're ready, they're not going to price themselves out of the market. So it gives them an opportunity to save a good deposit, et cetera, for when they are ready to settle down and buy a property.
There's that sage old advice that perhaps older people are given, but in terms of an investment strategy, it's always about cash, equity, and properties. What is the potential long-term financial impact for a person who chooses to rent and forsakes buying property, do you think?
Look, I mean, I would always recommend buying over renting in the long term. So, you know, to buy a property, you need to get into the property market at some point. It also gives you an opportunity to have an investment that's a long-term investment, that when you are ready for retire, that you have a paid-off property that you can actually sell and that you can actually retire from.
So you talk about this trend continuing, and I understand it, but is that a short-term move, or do you think in time, if the variables that we've discussed change, there might be a shift back towards home ownership?
I think, you know, once the conditions in South Africa are correct, so, you know, once our infrastructure improves, once property markets start increasing on a yearly basis like they used to in the past, then I certainly think people will look at property in a different light and they will start investing in property again because they will see it as an investment again. At the moment, I don't think a lot of people are seeing property in most of the country as an investment, besides Cape Town in the Western Cape, where you are seeing an increase in property prices. But the rest of the country is very flat with regard to property prices.
Chris Tyson, thank you very much indeed for that insight. Chief Executive Officer, Tyson Properties in Cape Town. I do appreciate your time today. And before I leave you, I've got two quick items on the energy front. Firstly, motorists can expect some relief at the pumps this Wednesday, with petrol prices dropping by 22 cents a litre and diesel by up to 42 cents. And that is thanks to lower international fuel prices as well as the stronger rand that we've been experiencing. At the same time, Eskom says it's ready to deliver what it terms stable electricity this winter, with the Energy Minister, José Enzo Ramakgopa, announcing that several key power units, like those at Kusile and soon Medupi, are back online, helping to strengthen the grid. He was addressing a news briefing at Eskom headquarters this morning. And that's where we are going to leave it. That's MoneyWeb at midday for today. We are live at noon weekdays. We are then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.